For longer than I've been climbing, for longer than I've been alive, the most talked-about piece of writing in the sprawling literature of mountaineering has been a mysterious tome known as the Little Black Book. Only a single copy is said to exist. Between its well-thumbed covers is a top-secret, continually updated catalog of the planet's finest unclimbed mountaineering routes. The highest, steepest, most extravagantly sculpted chunks of vertical ground that have yet to be groped by chalk-smeared human hands. The author of this fabled work is a resident of the Pacific Northwest, name of Wolfgang Friedrich Becky, although folks are careful to address him as Fred, or just plain Becky, or practically anything except his given name, lest they feel the sting of his unholy wrath. Some say that Becky's Little Black Book is apocryphal, that it's merely the product of too much wine and too much idle talk around too many campfires. Oh no, counters Sybil Goman, a free-spirited 42-year-old glaciologist who was the most recent in a long, turbulent string of Becky's female companions. There really is a black book. I've seen it. It's crammed full of notes about unclimbed peaks, big north faces that were overlooked by the mapmakers, last great problems in out-of-the-way corners of obscure ranges, that sort of thing. Fred guards it with his life. The intense secrecy is understandable, because climbing where no one has ever climbed before is Fred Becky's life, and has been for more than half a century. His affairs have orbited so tightly around the hot sun of cutting-edge climbing that virtually everything else was long ago scorched from his existence. Becky, understand, is the original climbing bum. Nowadays, of course, every crag from Smith Rock to the New River Gorge is crawling with pierced-eared rock rats who've copped an attitude, hit the road, and are living in tents in the dirt. But most of them are just temporarily slumming. Within a few years, they'll be back in suburbia attending PTA meetings. For Becky, climbing is no mere pose. Back in the 1930s, he stripped his life of everything that might impede his campaign on the heights, and 5 decades later, the mountains are still all that matters. The closest thing he has to a home is a second-hand Volkswagen with 400,000 miles on it. From the erudite tone of the 7 mountaineering books he's authored, one would never guess they were scribbled in Burger Kings on the backs of placemats pilfered by the stack from the front counter. He has duffels of battered climbing hardware cached in the basements of acquaintances across the West. But the rest of Becky's possessions wouldn't crowd a small closet. Thanks to his single-minded focus, Becky has achieved a kind of quirky, enduring magnificence to which attention must be paid. He is the Pete Rose of mountaineering, an alpine Charlie Hustle, climbing's foremost collector of big-league hits, the most prolific first ascensionist in the 206-year history of the sport. He has shared a rope with many of the premier climbers of the age, Yvon Chouinard, Leighton Koehr, Fritz Wiesner, Royal Robbins, Heinrich Harrer, and his creations include a disproportionate number of the most remarkable climbs in North America. Nobody, not even Becky, knows precisely how many virgin lines he's plucked over the decades, but the tally must be close to 1,000. Greatness, however, hasn't come cheap, and the tab for Becky's formidable obsession might finally be coming due at the age of 69. It's 4 a.m. on a winter morning. A caustic wind rattles the walls of the tent, which is pitched high in the snowbound North Cascades. Jesus Christ, you see a bottle of Nuprin over there? Any Nuprin? Demands Becky in the fractured, elliptical mutter that characterizes Fred speak. Thought I brought a bottle of Nuprin. Jesus Christ. A little white bottle. Plastic, I don't know. Nuprin. Maybe I forgot it, I don't know. You got any aspirin on you? Some aspirin? Jesus Christ. By the time the sun has risen above the serrated eastern skyline, Becky, Mark Babier, a frequent rope mate of Fred's, and I are out of the tent, bundled against the cold and starting to climb. Becky, who is quick to confess that he isn't a morning person, is not a pretty sight. As one of his ex-girlfriends warned me, Fred in the morning is a bundle of aches and wrinkles with legs. It hurts to see him move. His face is a gaunt, astonishing matrix of furrows etched deep into leathery flesh, framed by wisps of shoulder-length hair whipping crazily in the wind. It's apparent that his hunched-over frame is stiff and creaky, but his sinewy arms and oversized hands hint at untapped reserves of power, and Becky chugs up the slopes of Sahali Peak at a steady clip that, however painful, enables him to hold his own with climbers half his age. Which is fortunate, because that's how old almost all of Becky's partners are these days. Today, Becky's morning disposition is even more toxic than usual, owing to an unexpected change in plans. When he recruited Baby A and me for this 3-day expedition, it was to make the first winter ascent of a mountain that Becky had long had his sights on, a project considerably more ambitious than Sahali, the 8,680-foot peak that we are presently climbing. Last night, after arriving at our campsite, Baby A and I decided the original goal was too distant to be practical, and consequently staged a mutiny, proposing Sahali, an easy but handsome spire rising directly above our tent, as an alternative. After more than an hour of heated argument, Baby A and I prevailed. Fred has been holding it against us ever since. "I don't know why you guys even came on this trip," he sputters. "If you didn't want to climb something worthwhile, something worth climbing, Jesus Christ, I don't know. I did Sahali 30 years ago with a girl, and she'd never even climbed before, Jesus Christ." By noon, however, when we reach the base of the 200-foot summit pyramid, the wind has quit, the surrounding glaciers are gleaming in the cold sunlight, and Becky's spirits seem to be picking up. Upon registering at the Marble Mount Ranger Station the day before, the woman behind the desk had informed us that we would be the only people in the backcountry in the entire North Cascades National Park, a wilderness half the size of Delaware. Fred now drones on about this anomaly with mischievous delight, as if we have pulled a brilliant practical joke on the 4 million working stiffs who are currently going about their humdrum business in the cities and towns that sprawl 2 hours down the road from the trailhead parking lot. The final pitch up Sahali, steep, downsloping rock, slippery with frost, turns out to be trickier in these off-season conditions than any of us had anticipated. Becky hogs the lead and beetles his way up a razor-edged arete plastered with rime. When Mark and I join him on the tiny summit, he's manic, chattering, ebullient. Jagged granite ridges and avalanche-swept ice fields, some of the wildest country in the conterminous United States, extend into the distance in all directions, a concentration of mountains, in the words of the late William O. Douglas, too numerous to count. I wonder what's going through Fred's mind as he gazes off, silent now, at the glut of dizzying topography that surrounds us. Becky has left his mark in many, many ranges, but nowhere more emphatically than here in the North Cascades. His life has been stitched into the very fabric of this remarkable landscape, wedded forever to a galaxy of peaks wearing names like Forbidden, Fury, the Dragon Teeth, Crooked Thumb, the Phantom, the Flagpole, Cutthroat, Despair. For several minutes, he takes in the view. Then he blinks a few times. His mental engine shifts visibly into a different gear, and a sly smile pierces the gray stubble sprouting from his face. "I don't know," Becky declares. "I've never heard of anyone climbing Sahali in winter. This could be the first. I don't know. We might be the first comedy team to do it. The first winter ascent of Sahali. Jesus Christ, I don't know."